This is the TriDot Podcast. TriDot uses your training data and genetic profile combined with predictive analytics and artificial intelligence to optimize your training, giving you better results in less time with fewer injuries. Our podcast is here to educate, inspire, and entertain. We'll talk all things triathlon with expert coaches and special guests. Join the conversation and let's improve together.
New episode of the TriDot Podcast. Thanks for joining us, everybody. Really cool show today. I'm joined by two TriDot athletes who both have extensive experience in extreme triathlon. It's not Ironman, it's not Xterra, it's extreme. And it's usually set in some of the most striking locations in the world that triathlon has to offer. So lots of great stories and insight to gain from these gentlemen today. Our first athlete joining us is Andrew Sutterberg. Andrew is a TriDot ambassador from Irvine, California. He's an 11-time Ironman finisher, well on his way to a legacy qualifying spot for Kona. He also regularly races tris on a tandem bike with his husband, David. Andrew has finished three extreme triathlons, and when he is not swimming, biking, and running, he works full-time as an agri-entertainment supervisor. Andrew, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Andrew. Long-time listener, first-time guest. Excited to be here.
Also joining us is TriDot athlete Jason Verbrecken. Jason lives in San Diego, California, where he works as a Pepsi sales rep. He's been racing tris for 5 years, racking up 9 Ironman and 4 extreme triathlon finish lines in his tri career. While the rest of us are training for our more normal races, Jason is working towards Black Lake in Montenegro over in Europe, which he is racing later this year. And then I believe, Jason, you have Himalaya Man in 2020 in Nepal next year. Is that correct?
That is correct. That's my big one I'm really excited about. Thanks for having me here today. I really appreciate it.
Well, I'm Andrew, the average triathlete, voice of the people, and captain of the middle of the pack. As always, we'll roll through our warm-up question, settle in for our main set conversation, and then wrap up with our cool down. Lots of good stuff. Let's get to it.
Time to warm up. Let's get moving.
Whether it's hiking the Appalachian Trail, swimming the English Channel, or biking across your home country, there are numerous distance challenges related to our sports. Guys, for our warm-up question today, if you were to take on an endurance challenge of some kind, whether it's a well-known one or one that you're going to create from scratch yourself, what would you do and why? Jason Verbrecken, let's go to you first on this.
Well, Andrew, I always try to find the craziest, the one that scares me the most, gets my adrenaline pumping, gets me excited. So my number one that is on my list and very high up there is Uberman. I don't know if you've ever heard of Uberman, but it's a total of 556 miles. The swim is 21 miles. You swim from Catalina Island to the shores of California. And then you basically bike 400 miles from obviously the shores over to basically where the Badwater run starts.
So you got
You got a 400 mile bike and there's about 20,000 feet of elevation gain. And then from there you run the 135 mile Badwater course up to the top of Mount Whitney. So 13,000 feet gain on the run.
So, the rest of us, we kind of do sprints and Olympics and half Ironman races to prepare ourselves for, the stepping up in distance to an Ironman. You're doing extreme triathlons almost as a way to step up to the Uberman distance and extreme level. Is that right?
That is correct. It may be crazy, but that's just what gets my blood pumping and what gets me excited.
Yep, it is crazy, no doubt. Is that a multi-day event, doing that kind of a distance?
Yes. I may have all the stats down of what the fastest time is, and I may already be calculating out what I would need to do, paces I would need to swim, bike, and run to break that record. But the record is 5 days and so many hours and minutes. So,
my man. Well, I will gladly be rooting for you as you do that. It sounds like a fun thing to cheer you on for. It's a little bit too far and a little bit too much elevation gain for my taste, but rooting you on, happy for you. Andrew, what extreme challenge would you most want to take on?
Well, I think Jason and I are two of kind because Uberman is like my end-all be-all race as well.
Is it?
I do some swimming with a group here in Orange County, and we had a couple of gals that were training to do the Catalina straight swim. And I was like, man, I got to get to that point if I ever want to do Uberman, do that 21-mile swim across. Other than Uberman, I would love to do a solo RAM, a race across America. I'd love to do that, but Uberman is kind of the end-all be-all.
Well, so Andrew, did you know, I mean, you and Jason know each other. You guys have hung out a little bit. Did you guys know that for both of you was kind of the bucket list?
I did not. No. I did not know that.
I had no clue he was going to say that.
But I guess I got somebody to race when we go do it, right?
Yeah, no kidding. If you guys pick the same year, I'll be more than happy to fly out and cheer you guys on and Sherpa and do whatever we can to help you towards that multi-day finish line. So my answer to this is not the Uberman going from Catalina Island to the top of Mount Whitney. My answer, I actually, and this might be somewhat influenced by watching a lot of Tour de France lately, but I would love to go do one of the hot route events that there's a company that puts on just kind of multi-day cycling tours in Europe where you take on, you know, some of the mountain passes through the Pyrenees or through the Dolomites in Italy or through the Alps. And they'll put on 3-day, 5-day, 7-day tours. And so you kind of get that Tour de France, you know, biking all day, every day for a few days in a row, up and down these mountain paths kind of experience without having to be as good as those guys or as strong as those guys. And I think it'd be coming from flat Texas. I've never gotten to, you know, climb mountains on a bike like that before. And I watch the tour every year. I watch the you know, big races in Italy and Spain, and you see all those cyclists up there doing those cool mountain passes, and I've just never gotten to do it before. So that would be my pick. I would love to fly to Europe and kind of take on one of those 3 or 5 day tours where I get to ride my bike in a really beautiful place, you know, up some crazy climbs that I've never gotten to do before. So that's the answer for me. We're going to throw this question out on social media. So make sure everybody that you are a part of the I Am Tri-Dot Facebook group. We have thousands of triathletes that are as crazy or less crazy or more crazy than the three of us who are going to have some great answers to this question. So make sure you go find the post today asking you, if you were to take on some sort of extreme distance challenge, which one would it be and why? Can't wait to hear your answers.
On to the main set. Going in 3, 2, 1.
With icy fjord swims, crew-supported courses, and elevated mountaintop finish lines, extreme triathlons are an adventurous take on the familiar swim, bike, and run race pattern. For some athletes, they are a one-and-done bucket list experience, while others keep coming back for more. Both of the guys joining me today have multiple extreme tries on their resume, so we'll hear plenty of stories and learn from their experiences in the sport. So Jason, Andrew, before we get to the extreme stuff, you know, you guys didn't buy a bike and then go out and take on an extreme race the next day. Let's kind of hear your start in triathlon. Andrew, how did you find tri?
So in 2012, I was probably about 60 pounds overweight. I actually was out in Los Angeles. I helped a friend move, and I ended up at a Richard Simmons workout class. And at the end of the class, Richard Simmons was super cool. He hung out with everybody, talked and answered questions, and he was asking me about my diet, and I was, of course, very overweight. And he all out slapped me and told me to get my diet checked. It kind of was a wake-up call because I was a collegiate runner, and I just kind of let everything go. A friend of mine knew that I had run in college. I swam in high school, and I started biking in college because my college roommate was a cyclist for a local shop team. And a friend of mine asked me to do a triathlon with him. So I said, sure. So I signed up for Galveston 70.3.
Okay.
So my first triathlon was Galveston 70.3 in April of 2013.
I certainly don't think very many triathletes can say that they got their start in the sport because they were at a fitness class and got slapped by the Richard Simmons. Was it a pretty good slap across the face? Is that where he got you?
He didn't hold back. He went straight across the face pretty hard.
Do you think that's like just his go-to move, like when he's talking to people at the end of class? Does he like try to figure out, okay, who am I going to slap today?
He was a pretty saucy guy at the time. It was a lot of fun. It was all in good sport. So It was a lot of fun.
So, Jason, I trust your triathlon journey, you know, did not involve being slapped by Richard Simmons. Mine certainly didn't. That would be too much of a wild coincidence if both of you guys had that in common. So, Jason, how did you get your start in the sport?
Well, I definitely didn't get slapped by Richard Simmons. I can promise you that. It might have been a whole different outcome that Andrew had than Richard and I would have had if that would have happened. But, yeah. But mine was sitting around with some friends one night drinking, of course, and my buddy had just done a sprint triathlon, and he was talking about it and bragging about it. And as the night got on and the more adult beverages got consumed, it turned into me saying, "You didn't do anything special. I can beat you." And so he's like, "Hey, I know this race in like 3 months. Let's." So the bet was, a bet was made of who was going to win. And that was my, I literally went home and, or when, once I felt better, I checked out on the computer and found, you know, how to do a triathlon, what I needed, and basically just went to 24-hour fitness every day and trained as hard as I could, as fast as I could, every single day.
Wow.
Until race day for 3 months straight. And I ended up beating him.
And very good.
after that, I didn't invest anything really in it. I didn't buy a bike. I borrowed a bike. I borrowed bike shoes. I borrowed a bike helmet. I had a pair of old running shoes. It was one and done. It was over for me. As that was in 2012, that race. So in 2016, I'd always been going to the gym, that kind of an active person, but not too active. And in 2016, I was like, God, I really enjoy doing that triathlon, and I would like to change up my lifestyle. And so we were still really good friends, and I said, hey, I found this triathlon. Let's have a rematch. And he was more than happy to rematch, and this time I ended up buying a bike and started investing in it. And we raced in October of 2016, and I loved the challenge. I loved everything about it. I fell in love with the sport. And so that was October, and I said, how am I going to stay in this and really commit? November, I signed up for IMAZ, Ironman Arizona, a month later. After doing two sprint triathlons, I signed up and said, I got a year to train. I guess it's time to get serious.
Yeah. So, you know, that's, I guess, two more triathlons than some people do before jumping straight to the first Ironman. Some people just go straight for it. So at least you had that under your belt, which is great. Jason, where in that kind of sequence, did you find TriDot and start training with TriDot?
Literally after I used that same program and technique for the rematch of just, you know, my brain knew, well, to get faster, you just got to train fast, hard every day.
Yeah.
I had no clue. And I signed up for IMAZ, and literally at the same time, I stumbled, you know, look, I was trying to read everything I could online, find everything. I stumbled across TriDot, and I liked everything, how it was, you know, everything was off of me, my times. You know, I had seen all the generic kind of plans on the internet, you know, do this time at for this long. And I was like, how is this going to help? Everybody's different. And as soon as I saw TriDot, I instantly was like, wow, this program is for me. It knows what's going on. And so I signed up for IMAZ and signed up for TriDot at almost the exact same time. So I've been with TriDot since 2016.
All right, cool. I think it's super great to hear. Just kind of y'all's backgrounds. What I like about both of your backgrounds is, you know, I mean, everybody kind of starts in a similar place, right? We all start in a place where we sign up for our first triathlon, whether it's because a celebrity fitness instructor slapped us or because a friend of ours made us a bet around a drunken campfire. You know, we all sign up for one reason or another, and we end up on that first sprint starting line. And you know, everybody's tri journey kind of takes a different direction from there. And there is no wrong direction. There's no bad direction. There's no, you know, direction that's better than the others. But what's cool about the two of you guys is that your tri journey has taken you into the extreme and these extreme triathlon races. So, You know, in the world of extreme tri, you know, there's a handful of races to choose from. There's not dozens, hundreds like there are for more mainstream races. So tell us, you know, what are kind of the big ones and which ones have you guys done? Andrew, I'll start with you.
So I think the big ones, of course, Norseman is the mother of all extreme tries. There's Norseman, there's Last Man, which was the first extreme try that I did. It's put on by extreme endurance events, Aaron Pallion, who used to be out of Houston, now is out of Michigan. Fantastic race. He also puts on Iceland Man, which I did. He also put on Aloha Man for one year. I really think that Norseman is like the big one, but a Last Man was my first jump in. It was really I saw an ad for it, and it was just an article. I think it was on triathlete.com, and I was like, man, that's gonna hurt. I want to do it. I had to do it. And when I saw when it was opening, I was actually in Colorado Springs training for Ironman Boulder. And we had 7 people with computers open, logged into my active account. And I was like, I'm getting into this race. And so everybody was just refreshing. And as soon as it came live, I got in right away. And I said, a couple other people did too. And I said, nobody touch anything until I'm confirmed that I got into this race. And I got in right away. So I was very, very happy. And then the training started for it. So it's a little bit different animal. I had done 4 fulls when I signed up for Last Man, and I was already signed up for my next 2. My 5th one was Ironman Boulder 2016, which was my first race as a tri-down athlete. And then I did Ironman Maryland in October of 2016, which is where tri-down really started kicking.
Okay, so Andrew, your first extreme try was Alaska Man. The latest one you did, I mean, literally just days ago, you just finished Iceland Extreme Triathlon for the second time. Which ones have you done in addition to Alaska and Iceland?
I've only done, I did Alaska Man in 2017. I did Iceland in 2019. And then I did Iceland again this year in 2020.
So Jason, which ones have you done?
I have done Andrew and I are almost 2 peas in a pod.
Without even trying to be.
Yeah. I mean, my first one was Alaska Man, just like him, but he did it the first year. I originally, as I was training for Ironman Arizona, I saw the video of Andrew's race, and I don't even know how I stumbled upon it, and I saw this race in Alaska, and you know, running this mountain and in this freezing cold water, and the competitors coming out and they're just shaking and can need help changing their wetsuits. And I'm like, my jaw hit the ground and I was like, what is this race? And yeah. It was Alaska Man. And again, this was August, September-ish. And I Ironman Arizona was in November, and I'm like, oh, I'm signing up for the next race. And then I was like, well, wait a second. You haven't even done one Iron. Reality actually kind of slapped me in the face for once.
Yeah.
Usually I'm just, let's sign up. Let's go. But I was like, I hear so many stories of after you've done one Ironman, you either love it or you're never going to do another one in your life. So I was like, I held off and I said, you know what? This isn't for me right now. Let me concentrate on my Ironman Arizona. And then maybe, because they only took 250 people and it was a lottery system. So I'm like, I'm not even entering. I'm just going to wait till the following year in 2019 and go for it then. Well, I did. So I signed up for their newsletter and emails. And at the, after IMAZ, all of a sudden, beginning of December, I got an email from them saying, we have open spots. Some people that won the lottery didn't take their spot. So Monday morning at 8 a.m., we are going to just have open registration. So I was just like Andrew. I'm like, this must be a sign from the tri gods telling me you need to go to Alaska, man. So at 7:55, I was on the computer, refresh, 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 and boom, it popped up, my registration, and I signed up, and the rest is history, as they say. So yeah, I've done Alaska Man. I did Iceland Extreme with Andrew the same year. I've done Norseman, and I did Aloha okay. Man.
And so some of the other ones out there, there's Patagonia Man, which is down in Argentina, Chile.
Yep.
Are we missing any? I mean, you're doing the one in Montenegro later this year. There's the one in Nepal that you're doing next year.
There's about 18 of them total now.
Wow, very cool. I didn't realize it was that extensive. So, I mean, obviously in the normal tri scene, you know, there's your sprints and your Olympics. There's, you know, your 70.3s and your 140.6s, and they're all kind of the same, just on different courses. So when we call these triathlons extreme, you know, what is it that makes it extreme? Is it more distance? Is it more elevation gain? Is it just the locations? You know, tell us a little bit about what these courses are like and what how these venues themselves make the races different and extreme.
I would say it's a combination of all that stuff. They're all in these beautiful locations around the world. Like you were, you know, they've got them in Italy. They got them in Switzerland, Nepal. They are all over in some of the most beautiful places I've ever, you know, laid eyes upon. Most of them all have, like you said, they have the cold swim. You can pretty much, except for Aloha Man, every other race has a cold swim. You're going to be swimming in cold water.
wait, when you say cold, how cold is it normally in these places?
55 and below, I would say average.
Alaska Man, my first year, it was in the low 50s, and then we had to swim through glacial runoff, so it dropped into the high 40s.
Wow.
And you wouldn't believe that you can go numb a second time. But you get into that cold water and your hands have to go numb a second time. And then we came out of it, and then there's another set of glacial runoff about a half a mile up where you went numb a third time. And it was just a crazy experience to feel your body go numb multiple times while being in the same water for an hour and a half.
Yeah, so when I asked the question, what is it about these that makes them extreme? I mean you're kind of answering right there, Andrew, just in the sense that in talking about the swim course, you have to reference the glacial runoff. There's not any normal triathlon where glacial runoff is a factor on the swim course temperature. So that's part of what makes these so extreme. Now I know Norseman is famous for, you know, jumping off the boat into the fjord and swimming back to shore. Are most of the swim starts that way, or are they all a little different?
I think they're all a little different.
Yeah, they all have their unique kind of start, or, you know, like I said, jumping off the boat to. You know, Iceland has literally their swim start. When we did it, both Andrew and I did it, we walked for probably a couple hundred yards because the water was low that year. We were like in a swim run going for a little while.
Okay.
Yeah. That year they changed the swim 3 days before the race because there were lion's mane jellyfish, I think they're called. They were the size of basketballs. And there was thousands of them on the swim course, and the race director was like, this isn't safe. So they switched the swim course 3 days before the race and ended up doing it in this lake right at the base of this amazing mountain. And it was probably 200-300 yards where you're running in shin deep water, and then all of a sudden it dropped off.
Wow.
So we all had really fast swim times because we got to run 200 yards at the swim.
So you get done with the swim, you know, you go through transition, which I assume looks similar to a normal transition, and you go out for the bikes. So what are the bike courses normally like at these events?
Most of them have a lot of climbing you're going to be doing.
Yeah.
I would say almost all the extremes, they have 9,000 plus on the bike for elevation gain.
Wow.
And you can expect any kind of weather. You're mostly biking through mountain passes, around mountains. So you get sun, you get wind, you get sleet, you get rain. You have pretty much all the elements at times out there, depending, you know, how the day goes.
Iceland, the first year, 2019, was really, really rainy and cold. The wind kicked up and it was just rainy and cold. It made it almost unbearable because my hands got so cold that I couldn't squeeze my brakes on the downhills.
Wow.
So it was just kind of freewheeling downhill at 35 to 40 miles an hour, hoping for the best in the rain.
Wow.
And like that wind picked up and I had no discs were allowed because they have tendency. They knew the wind picks up around the bike course. So I had the deepest wheels, you know, because I'm all thinking I need the speed. So that wind started was a steady crosswind. It wasn't gusts. It was a steady crosswind. And I felt, and I was leaning on the bike, and I swear I was at a 45 degree angle biking straight on the road. And I was like, if this wind stops, I am just going to fall over. That's how far I felt. Like I literally could have put my hand down, I think, and touched the ground. That's how far I felt. I was leaning just to stay going down the road. It was crazy.
I mean, any of the pictures I've seen of you guys, you know, just on social media, where you're racing these races, I mean, on the bike courses, you've got your jackets, you've got, you know, gloves on, you've got kind of the winter riding gear on. So it makes sense that you're talking about just the elevation gains and the winds and the rains. So after taking on bike courses like that at these extreme tries, you know, does a normal 112-mile Ironman course just seem like a walk in the park, Andrew, compared to these things?
112-mile bike course is never a walk in the park. But
okay, that's good to know. That's comforting.
When it's supported and you've got aid stations, it just seems a lot more doable.
So you get off the bike and it's time to go for a run. And so is the run just, is it always trail running? Is it always climbing mountains? What's kind of the run terrain at these things?
You have a combination of both. Usually sometimes there's a little bit of running on the street, but then mostly you're hitting a trail and you are, again, running up a mountain most of the time and then running back down. I would say average on the runs is probably 3,000 feet plus of gain on the run.
Wow.
So, you know, Norseman, for example, you really the first, what I think it's 15 miles is literally on the road and flat, almost running downhill. But then you're basically running to the base of the mountain. And the next thing you're doing is they call it Zombie Hill, which is taking you up to the ski resort. So you're on the road, but it's the typical ski resort road where it's just switchbacks all the way up. And you're going up that. And then you get all of a sudden to a checkpoint and you're actually on the mountain climbing to the top. And it's trails / rocks. There's little spray paint on rocks every so many hundred yards because you can't even see the trail. You just have to kind of follow these spray painted rocks that you find. And you're climbing at times. Your hands are in front of you climbing up different rocks depending, you know, how steep it is at that moment. And so you get a little bit of everything on it.
So guys, you know, hearing just the courses that you're taking on, hearing a little bit of what these races are like, you know, I think of TriDot, you know, TriDot training is all about the data and it's all about being able to quantify what you've done, what you're about to do, and what you need to do to be prepared for the race you're going to do. How do you guys leverage TriDot to prepare for these more unconventional races?
So TriDot is very, very focused on a lot of things. Because I know what my workout's going to be, or basically what my workout's going to be every day, every week. And it really focuses in on making you build that power. You know, you want to get fast before you go too far. You want to get strong before you go too long. And it really makes you focus on building that power, building that speed, and then kind of pushing it to go a little bit further. I think one of the big things for me in my first run up for Alaska Man was having a coach make all the difference. Like there's all the different levels at TriDot, and having a coach that was basically mean coach. Elizabeth James is my coach. She's been my coach since 2016. And she got the name mean coach when I was training for a lesson because she would make me do long runs and then go spend an hour to 2 hours on the stair climb.
Wow.
So go out, run 15 miles, now go do 2 hours on the stair climb. And so she really kind of tuned in. You have this mountain at the end of your run course. You need to be strong to climb.
Yeah.
And so we did fantastic on the mountain. Elizabeth and her husband Charles were my pacers at Alaska Man, and I believe we passed 58 people on the mountain in Alaska.
Wow.
So we did some work on the mountain, and it was amazing because I was able to just focus so much on really getting strong to climb that mountain.
Yeah, no, very, very cool. And I know she, you know, Elizabeth on the podcast shared a story about taking a shot on the top of the mountain at the end of Alaska Man with one of her athletes. That was with you, correct?
That was with me, and that was one of the worst ideas I have ever had. There was the three of us that ran, all did a shot, and then David, didn't run, did a shot. He was fine with his shot. The rest of us were not happy we did a shot.
Good for David. Yeah, good for him. So Jason, how about you? How does Tridot help you get to the start line and finish line just of these insane events?
I use Tridot almost, well, the exact same way I would use it if I was training for an Ironman. When I did Alaska Man, I didn't have a coach. I'm a little independent sometimes. And so I'm like, hey, I trust Tridot. I know it's going to get me there. It got me there for my Ironman. There's a few different things, but at the same, I'm still going the same amount of miles. Yes, I've got the elevation gain, but I used it for my bike. All I would do was really anytime I hit zone three, zone four stuff for my workouts, I just slowed my cadence down and took it as I was like, I was climbing a hill. So I was building the strength with the slow cadence in my legs. As where, at Ironman Arizona, it's mainly flat. You're going to be at a higher spinning cadence. You can push the power at those with the higher cadence. I slowed my cadence so my legs were used to that climbing feeling. And then I did my runs whatever Tridot gave me, I did them that way, except towards the end, I just started hitting the trails. I'd run trails and make sure that they had, I would try find routes that got close to the same kind of elevation I was going to be gaining for my race. And I also started to do like Andrew, the only thing I added in off different from Tridot was the stair climber going and doing a run and like running straight to the gym or a drive to the gym, go for my run. And then get back, throw a pack on, and go onto the right to the stair climber to build that strength in my legs for the climb on the mountain. And then when I did Norseman, and Iceland, they were 7 days apart. So did Iceland with Andrew in 2019. And as soon as I got done, it was packed back up, flew over to Norway to do Norseman the following weekend. So for that, I ended up, I talked to Cindy, who got me Kurt Madden, the man, the myth, the legend, as my coach. And he helped me tweak, obviously running two extreme races 7 days apart. So now I've had him since it was 2018 after I did Ironman Arizona again in 2018. After Ironman Arizona, I got Kurt, and he brought me up and added in little things here and there. But we still, I would say 95% of it is what Tridot gives you everything you need from to do your sprint to do these extreme triathlons. It's there. It's there for you. It's got everything you need.
Jason, you just talked about, flying from California to Iceland to Norway. I mean, just between the crazy cool locations and just the playing crazy courses, I'm sure both of you guys have plenty of wild stories to tell from these races. So Jason, let's start with you. What is maybe your all-time favorite moment from an extreme try? And then what is maybe the wildest thing that's happened to you on course while you were out there?
Okay, well, I've got two all-time moments.
Lay them on us.
The first one is, it's with Norseman. I've watched every prior year's video that they have of Norseman. And when you get to the top of Gustafsson, there is, this little concrete rock shed up on top building. And it's got these rock stairs right at the end. And the finish line's up there, and you see the videos of the guys going up there, guys and girls, and they just reach those steps and break down, and it shows the whole view. I swear you can see all of Norway from up there on a clear day.
Wow.
And you get to a certain point where I knew I was going to make it to the top, and I knew I was going to get the coveted, the extreme races don't really have medals. They have a finisher shirt. And the shirt kind of shows how far you made it. You know, sometimes you don't make a cut off and they keep you from running the mountain. So you'll have like a white finisher shirt, or for like, if you make it all the way to the top at Norseman, you get the coveted black finisher shirt. So I knew I was going to get the black finisher shirt. I'm like, no big deal. But as soon as I saw those steps and all the other people finishing, it all crossed my mind. And it was just like, oh my God, this is the greatest feeling in the world. I made it to the top of supposedly the most extreme race, one day race
in the world.
In triathlon. Yeah, I did it. So that was one. My second one had to be Aloha Man. I had a decent swim. I'm a mid packer. I'm never up in the front of these races competing. So I had a decent swim and I got out and my Sherpa's like, hey, you're in like 13th place right now. And I was like, oh great. And I had a quick transition. So I was like, I think I might've passed a couple people, and we get out on the bike and I'm going good. And one guy passes me, a second guy passes me, and I started to increase my power. I'm like, this isn't right. And I was like, nope, stick to the plan. It was early on. And that race was only, it was 109 miles, but literally we took off and got on the Queen K, right? Yes, Queen K. And we went right up the mountain there. So it literally was from sea level and we went up 10,000 feet straight.
Wow.
So it was literally like 52 miles out and then, you know, 52 miles back. And so I was like, okay, plenty of time. And all of a sudden I passed that one biker back. All right, going good. And then we're getting closer to the top. I passed that second biker. I'm like, all right. Getting close to the top where we turn around and I'm like, all right, this is where I'm going to be able to see where I'm at. I keep going about 1 mile. I haven't seen anybody. And all of a sudden about a half a mile to turn around, I see a racer. I'm like, oh, okay. There's the first one. Now I'm going to see the rest of the pack. Well, the next thing I know, I'm at the turnaround and I'm turning around and my Sherpa's there and he's like, you're in second. And I just,
I just
kind of nodded. Like, okay. And then I started pedaling. I'm like, I think I'm in second place. And then the adrenaline hit me. I'm like, oh my gosh, what is going on here? And that moment was just, it just clearly in my head of that's never happened. And it got me going. And luckily I would say I'm not your average triathlete size person. I'm 6'3", about 205 in weight. So I knew the next, I had 10,000 feet of going straight down. And yeah. I have no problem
going straight down.
Yeah. And the road was as smooth as glass. The wind was, I think we had a tailwind, and I just tucked in on my bike and went, and I ended up flying by the first place guy on the way down. I think I hit 57 miles an hour. The race director said they were next to me in the car and they were like, couldn't believe that they were, you know, I was going faster than the speed limit and they couldn't keep up with me. So it was pretty amazing.
All right. No, that's super, super cool. What would you say is like the wildest thing that's happened to you?
The wildest thing for me would have to be Alaska Man. You know, they give us, every pre-race meeting we had was bears. We had to wear a bear bell. We had to have bear spray. If there were animals on the trail during the race at all and we didn't want to move or something, the race would be stopped and you may not get a finish. So all that's in my head. We're probably 2 miles from the finish line, you know, 15, 16 hours in. I'm exhausted. It was record heat day. I'm just dead. My Sherpa and I up, he goes, look, there's a bear and her two cubs right on the running trail. So I thought, you know, I have a race ban going on. I'm like, oh my God, they're going to stop the race. I'm not going to finish. I'm getting my bear spray out. He's literally packs off. He's got his phone out. He's taking video. And I'm like, I'm like, we got to keep going. They're going to stop the race. Don't let them see that the Bears are here. We got to go. And he's like, what are you talking about? That we're turning left 25 yards up. These Bears are the complete opposite way. But with race brain and tired, I literally was freaking out, thought my race was ending right there. And I was like, get your phone put away. We got to go. This Bear is not stopping my race.
All right. Yeah. On a normal local sprint try in Dallas Fort Worth, I don't see any Bears. So yep, that's definitely an extreme story. Andrew Soderberg, same question to you. What are some of the all-time favorite moments, and what is your all-time wildest moment?
All-time favorite moment. It's kind of weird. The swim in Alaska was so cool. And I'm swimming along, and for whatever reason, I just stopped. Poked my head up, and I took my goggles off, and it was just this moment where I just took in everything that was around me. It was worth the 30 seconds that I spent there. Because everything was super calm and quiet. The race started at 4 o'clock in the morning, and there was something like magical. And it was like, I'm really doing this. And it was a really cool moment for me to just just soak it all in. And I was trying so hard that entire day, like on the run, on the bike, on the swim, that I wanted to just soak it all in. And there's this moment, like I can see it in my mind still, of like what the mountains to my left looked like. Up to the right was the rest of Resurrection Bay. There were swimmers in front of me. There were swimmers behind me. And it was just a super calm moment where I was like, I'm really doing this. And I kind of knew that it was a good thing and a bad thing because I knew I was hooked on the X-Drives. But it wasn't like a washing machine like you get at an Ironman race.
Yeah.
You know, like there was 180 of us in the water. And so we're spread out. And it was just something so peaceful about that. Another really cool moment was on the run. Not a lot of people are going to be able to say this. Elizabeth James was my pacer, and her husband Charles was behind me. And at one point, I told Elizabeth, I go, you have to speed up or get out of my way. And it was like, you created this monster by making me do all these hours on this stair climber. I was like, you have to speed up or get out of my way. And she's like, okay, we'll speed up. I mean, no one's going to tell Elizabeth to move because she's ridiculously fast, but it was just this moment where I was like, you're not going fast enough. And I was, you know, that's the last 7 miles of a ridiculous race. And I just had it because of all the time that I put in the stair climber. So it was kind of nice to be able to tell her to speed up for once. Yeah. And it was really cool when we got to the top of that race, her and Charles just stopped and kind of looked at me like, hey, you did this. This is your finish line. And I was like, no, this is our finish line. We all kind of did it together. So those are some really cool moments. I got a really good picture of Elizabeth and I on the run with a glacier in the background. So you got some really cool memories from that race in Alaska.
It's like a commercial for Extreme Tri, right? I mean, just hearing that story and just knowing that Extreme Tri isn't the lone wolf sport. I mean, Extreme Tri is supported. You have help getting to and from and getting your way through the course and just getting to encounter that kind of an atmosphere and that kind of a venue and the scenery with people that you know and love is just super cool. I mean, you just can't beat it. You're borderline talking me into trying one of these things. Borderline. Although I think I would much rather come Sherpa one of you guys instead and let you do all the hard stuff. So
that's kind of the beauty of the Iceland race. They actually have a half distance. So you don't
okay,
have to
very cool.
To the full, so you can do the half distance at Iceland and get a little bit of a taste to really hook you on the full.
Okay. I mean, literally, like my wife can tell you, like Iceland is like a bucket list place for me to go to anyway. So, I mean, since there's a triathlon there, why not go and do the try, right? Why not go and do the race? So,
exactly.
But let's talk just a little bit about having, you know, a Sherpa and a crew for these things. You know, what role do they play for you throughout the entire race experience?
They are your everything. Without them, you're not going to finish. I mean, like we both talked with Alaska Man, you get out of the water and you are so cold, you're not changing out of your wetsuit without help. Your hands just aren't working. They literally are there. Strip. You have your own private wetsuit stripper to say, and they're literally helping you put your socks on, get your shoes on. I mean, and a lot of these, I would say a majority of the extreme tries are point to point races. So where you're starting is not where you're ending. So they, so once you're on your bike and going, they're cleaning up your wetsuit, they're packing it up, they're getting in the car, they're starting to follow you, you know, they're leapfrogging you, making sure you're okay, making sure you don't have any problems. It starts, you know, raining hard, you may need a jacket from them. They have your nutrition. They're your lifeline. Without them, you're dead in the water, basically. You're not going in, you're not going anywhere. So, I mean, not only is it a long day on you, it's an extremely long day. And they're in every minute of it with you. Their adrenaline's going just like you. They're probably having to do more because they're thinking, all right, where is he going to be? Where do I need to be? Where you're just head down and putting in the work, where they're trying to make sure that your day is perfect. So when you cross the finish line, like Andrew said, when you cross the finish line together, it's not just you crossing the finish line. You're with your team, and it's because of your team you all were able to make that finish and do something amazing together. It's a complete different feeling than an Ironman where you don't need anybody there. You can do the whole, I mean, they've got your support, they got your aid stations, you got your special needs bags, you got everything's taken care of for you. You can go to that race all by yourself and be fine. Where your Sherpa crew, your friends, family, whoever it is, you are all one team doing it together. And I think that's one of the things that I love about it and makes it so special that you get to share that with somebody else and have that camaraderie out there.
Yeah, it's a super cool experience because they do everything for you. I know my crew for Alaska Man, I didn't want to yell at them when they were doing stuff that was annoying me. So, but I was so excited to see them every time that I got to them that I forgot to be like, hey, you need to do this differently. For example, David was doing all of my bottles for me with my nutrition, and he was shaking them up and they were perfect, but it's the Camelback bottles and he didn't open the lock on them. So I had to open the little lock as I'm biking down the road, just little things that annoy me. My mom and dad came with to Alaska Man, and my dad was in charge of getting me solid foods. And I brought probably 50 Honey Stinger waffles, and my dad only gave me ginger snap waffles. I had like five flavors of waffles. People give me ginger snap waffles. So I cannot eat ginger snap anything anymore because it just
That's hilarious.
Ruined it all for me. But I mean, without that crew, you can't do it. They're your everything. I mean, they're literally your everything on the race course out there. So having that crew is amazing. I wish that I had taken a picture of the binder that Elizabeth James made for Alaska Man.
I mean, I bet it was very thorough.
It was so thorough, and Charles was my helper in transition one, and he and I had an agreement that he would help me take off everything except for my Speedo. He said I was
okay. That's fair.
it's a fair agreement. But it was I came out of the water and my goggles hurt my face because my face was so cold, but my fingers wouldn't bend to take off my goggles. So I was like, "Wow, take these goggles off my face. It's killing me." And it was kind of funny because all these little things that you take for granted that you would do in a normal race, you're just not able to do for yourself.
Wow. That's wild. Yeah. Well, I imagine after, you know, for a lot of folks, they're going to hear this episode and they're going to be interested in traveling to one of these or doing one of these. But I mean, some folks might be like me where they're like, man, I think Sherping one of these sounds like a lot of fun. So y'all might start getting messages to your inbox with people, you know, wanting to audition to be your next Sherpa. So we can turn a reality show out of that. You guys listen to the podcast, you know, we've talked before, you know, I'm just a massive proponent of traveling for races and using races to experience different corners of the world. I mean, for me, that's a hobby. For you two, it sounds like it's more of a lifestyle. What have you seen and enjoyed, you know, in the host cities and countries when you visited these races?
Oh man, for Alaska, I mean, we got to go whitewater rafting. We got to do a ton of hiking. We spent about a week after Alaska Man, 6 days after Alaska Man, just exploring Alaska. And I mean, Iceland, you get to hike glaciers and we did the Golden Circle, so we got to see waterfalls and geysers. And I'm kind of a museum nerd. So when we were in Reykjavik, both times I've been in Reykjavik, we spent 3 or 4 days, or a chunk of 3 or 4 days, just doing different museums, natural history museums, different cultural museums.
Yeah, I think these races were made for you, Andrew, because they, like you said, I'm the same way. I get to see these brand new places that I've always wanted to go to. I get to race a triathlon there, and then I get to explore these beautiful countries and see all these amazing sites. And then when you're in these, you know, all the host cities I've been to with the triathlons, everybody is just so nice. And you're out to a restaurant, and then, of course, you know, you see somebody walking in with a pair of Hokas on, and you're, oh, that must be another racer. And
yep, you know, and what they're about.
Yeah, yep. And you know, most of them will have, we like to show what races we've been to, so we'll have some kind of triathlon shirt on, most likely, too. And then the next thing you know, they're pulling up a table, and they're from some other country, and you're exchanging stories and talking about the race, and you've all of a sudden got these brand new friends that you get to share this experience with. It's very overwhelming. It's flat out. I think somebody like you saying how you like to travel in these races, you would fall in love with.
At Iceland, one of the coolest things I've ever seen at the end of a race, every racer, because it was freezing cold, was given a hand-knitted wool blanket and a bowl of soup from an Icelandic grandmother that had made these huge vats of stew.
Wow.
And I was like, that could be the coolest, like, post-race meal ever.
You can't top that. Yeah.
I mean, this Icelandic grandmother hands you a big bowl of stew, and it was fantastic. And then you wrap up in this hand-knitted wool blanket.
That sounds amazing. It really, really does. Well, last question for you guys before we transition to the cool down here. You know, we've heard a lot of your stories, and I really hope that you know, some people have their interest piqued in these events. They're fantastic events to go check out and do. You know, my wife at this point, she's like, you know, Andrew, we can take a vacation without there being a race, right? And I'm like, why? Why would I do that when there's so many great races everywhere? So for anyone out there, you know, that are interested in adding an extreme tri to their own race schedule, you know, they've heard your stories and they want in. You know, what advice do you have for athletes looking to make the jump from normal tri to extreme tri? What would you say, Andrew?
I think one of the biggest things is to just go for it. Logistics seems so daunting at first. And once you, like, just put yourself into it and start hammering out one step, all right, how am I getting there? Where am I staying once I'm there? Who's going to be my Sherpa? It seems so daunting, but as you start ticking off all the boxes, it's actually very, very simple. And in a way, it's easier than doing a normal Ironman race because you don't have to think about what's there going to be on the course for me to eat, because what's on the course is what you bring with you. It's actually a lot easier once you just jump in and go for it. So I would say if you're interested in doing it, just go for it. The logistics, they figure themselves out. You ask a question, you answer the question yourself. You don't rely on a race director to be like, oh, we're going to have this nutrition. You have everything yourself and you just do it all yourself.
No, very cool. Jason, what would you say?
I would piggyback onto that and say the same. You got to go for it, especially after, you know, this last year we just had where, you know, things got canceled. You know, you can always say, oh, I just don't have the money right now, or, yeah, you know, I'm just not in good enough shape. You can always, you know, oh, it's on my bucket list. And you ask them, well, when are you going to do that? Oh, I don't know, maybe 3 or 5 years. And you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. Obviously now, as we've just seen, what's going to be next year. Do these races. Go, you know, go. If this is something you truly are passionate for and you wanted to do it, you've got to go for it. You seize that moment. And, you know, these races, most of them have been around a long time, or, you know, maybe it's a new one, but other races have, where you can talk to somebody, you know, there's other people who have done this that can help you if you're needing the help. You'll figure it out. As Andrew was saying, you'll start figuring the logistics part out of it, but you really just gotta take that leap and go for it. You don't know what tomorrow's going to bring you. You always are going to be, oh, I'm not in good enough shape. Maybe I should wait. Or maybe once this gets better or fixed, I'll start saving for it. No, Go for it.
Great set, everyone. Let's cool down.
For our cool down today, I want to talk a bit with you guys about the Iron Cowboy. Although not exactly an extreme triathlon, a recent extreme challenge in the triathlon world was his Conquer 100 challenge, where he set out to complete 100 full distance triathlons in 100 days. I think he was universally cheered on by triathletes and fans alike. And both of you guys spent some time with the Iron Cowboy, completing a few days of the challenge alongside of him. What was that experience like for you guys? Jason, let's hear from you.
Amazing, life-changing. It put my faith in humanity again. It made me realize I've barely touched the surface of what I'm capable of doing. I was supposed to go to Nepal at that, you know, when James was doing his stuff, as when I was training for Nepal. Nepal literally got canceled, you know, a week before I was supposed to fly out.
Yeah.
So I had all this training going in that, so I was like, I need to do something. And like, I got to go join the Iron Cowboy. And I thank God every day that my race in Nepal got canceled, because I got to experience something that I don't think we'll ever see again, most likely. And I got to be part of it. And I got to see him pushing through as much pain as I can't even imagine the pain. You know, I was there around, I think, 60s, in the low 60s, 61, 62s in there. And, you know, so I wasn't there when he even had more pain towards the end, but he was seeing him be able to just shut off and keep going, and the community supporting him, and other triathletes and cyclists, and not even triathletes and cyclists, just people in his hometown that came out because they got motivated from seeing his story and walked their first 5K. And then it also led into them running, going their first half marathon with them, or biking their first 100 miles that they've never done. You know, what he did helped change everybody's way to think, from just getting off the couch to even a seasoned athlete, what they are capable of. It was truly, truly one of the best things I've ever got to go experience.
Oh, very cool. I mean, that's high praise, and for good reason. Andrew, what was it like for you being there with them?
So I had a little bit different experience. It was amazing, but I didn't actually do any of the full days with them.
Okay.
I was there supporting. We were there days 62 through 68. And I was sherping for Jason and Daniel.
Okay.
And so I would swim with them in the morning. And then as soon as we were done swimming, I'd run out and get all their stuff ready for them, put the bike. And then I was bike supporting, and I'd do a little bit of the run with them in the evening. But it was so incredibly cool. That was the third time I'd actually gotten to interact with the Iron Cowboy. Day 12, when he was in Dallas for his 50-50-50, my tri team hosted him in Dallas. But it's just so cool to see this guy, because he talks about how he's just James, and then all of a sudden he turns it on and he's the Iron Cowboy. And the Iron Cowboy is bad dude. And like, he has 1,000-yard stare, but he's so determined. And it's such a cool experience to get to see him out there doing it every single day. And like, the community around him, his wife, his family, his Sherpas, you know, the wingmen, it's everybody was so amazing. And like Jason said, it really did bring back your faith in humanity, because everybody was there to see him succeed. You know, there's always haters, and he just doesn't care. He's just doing his thing. He was just head down, eyes forward, and just going. It was a really cool experience to get to see him do that. And I was so, so extremely grateful that Jason had posted that he was looking for somebody to go with him, and I was able to actually get to go with
them. Let me hop on there, Andrew, and just say how great our TriDot family is. I met Andrew, just met this one time in Iceland, you know, randomly in Iceland through TriDot. And I literally, you know, my friend here in San Diego, he was actually my Sherpa for Nepal. So he had been training also too. We were going up to Utah to James's together. And I was like, hey, if we're really going to try to do more than one day together, we're going to need a Sherpa or somebody just in case something happens. So I just put a post on Facebook saying, can somebody want to go on this crazy adventure with us? Andrew hit me up immediately and said, I'm down to go. And I was like, wait, you know that you're not going to get paid for this. You're basically going to be at our beck and call, anything we need, you know, you're going to be driving. I tried actually talking him out of it. Like, it's not going to be fun for you. It's going to be a lot of work. You sure you want to do this? We're planning to go for a whole week. Yes. Yes. And yes, he was a fellow triathlete that we met for a few minutes, and he's family. I mean, it was amazing. Yep. It just shows how great our Tri-Dot family really is.
All right, that's it for today, folks. I want to thank athletes Andrew Sutterberg and Jason Verbrecken for sharing their stories with us today. Shout out to Tri-Bike Transport for partnering with us on today's episode. As you get back to racing this year, head to tribiketransport.com to get your bike to the starting line. Have any triathlon questions or topics you want to hear us talk about? Head to tri.com/podcast and let us know what you're thinking. We'll have a new show coming your way soon. Until then, happy training.
Thanks for joining us. Make sure to subscribe and share the Tri-Dot podcast with your triathlon crew. For more great tri content and community, connect with us on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. Ready to optimize your training? Head to tri.com and start your free trial today. Tri-Dot, the obvious and automatic choice for triathlon training.